Introducing Caribbean Radio Show, the chat reel with Billy and friends. And now, here is your host.
All right, all right. Hey, I'm glad to be back. I hope everybody's fine. Everybody's doing great. Here at the chat, welcome to the chat reel show with Billy and friends and on the Caribbean Radio education to our knowledge station. I am your host, along with my son, and I would like to let you know that we have a great guest tonight. And this guy is got some knowledge. Whether people want to accept what he has to say, it's fine. Some that don't agree, okay, that's fine too. But his name is Rabbi Mordecai Yosef Ben Kara. I can't pronounce that right. But anyway, he'll be coming on. When he comes on, it's going to be a great, great show. I've looked at a lot of the stuff he has. He does have a book that's coming out that is going to be a great book. It talks about the black Jews, basically. So you're going to hear from him. But what we're going to do is I'm going to introduce my friends, and I'm going to start back with Julia. Julia Sabuda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We got Julia. That's one of the team. And they all are great in what they do. All right. Now, coming up next, you have Denise Ducati. How you doing, Denise? You back there?
Very happy
to be here. Rabbi Mordecai is running a little bit late, but technical difficulties, but he'll be here momentarily. Just happy to be here.
All right. So, have you met? Thank you so much. The next partner in crime is TJ Jackson. TJ, how you doing, my friend?
I am doing well, my friend. I was a little under the weather for a couple of days, but I am right as rain, or as Doc Holliday would say, right as the mail.
Yeah, I feel you. You know, I've been there, and I knew that you weren't feeling as well. And, you know, I appreciate you just, you know, coming on and helping us to move through the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, yes. So, once again, we're dealing with a guest that is, I think, unique in every way, in his knowledge on this Black Jewish story. And not story, but what he does. So, after we come back from break, we will be talking and bringing him out. And we'll take and see what he's got to say. I've got some questions for him. And the lines for calling will be open. The second hour, which would be at, 9 o'clock. And I think you just have to hit #1. I think that's what it is. And you'll be at the door. And once you hit that, it'll let us know that you're there at the door. So we will definitely appreciate your calls. And I'd like to say, you know, in any of the calls that we get, be respectful. Even if you may not agree with things, there's a way of talking to people and keeping it clean. So that's what we're going to do. But right as now, we're going to take and go to a commercial break. I guess, TJ, you're on deck, so let's see what we got coming.
All right. You're listening to the Caribbean Radio Show with Billy and Friends on the Chat Reel.
Okay. So, go ahead. It's all yours, TJ.
All right. Coming up, we got for you some Tom McDonald, Brainwashed, Shimmy Israel, Mariah Carey, and Third World. All for you on the Chat Reel with Billy and Friends on the Caribbean Radio Show.
Sounds like a plan. So let's go into it. Let's go into it.
Oh, yeah.
Have half the country fell asleep, but they scream woke. We're distracted by vaccines and TV shows, politics, celebrity, gossip, popular neat quotes. Black lives, white lives, which lives mean most? We only dedicate one day to remember our fallen soldiers, the men and women who died young. But if you come out the closet as Caitlyn Jenner, you're a hero and you get a whole Pride Month. The most dangerous pandemic's propaganda from these clowns. Only mask that's gonna save us is duct tape on their mouths. Don't speak. We don't need to defund police, need to defund the media who lies through their teeth like Big Pharma doesn't cure you, dog, cause every patient that gets cured is a customer lost. And Big Oil runs the world, the only wars that get fought are with the countries who have natural resources they want. Heard him claiming if a white man braids his hair and likes rap, he's appropriating culture. But if a white man acts too white, he's white trash, he's a racist, he's a bigot, he's a monster. Let's just have the conversation. Not every liberal is dumb, not all Republicans are racist. The government wants everybody fighting with their neighbors, cause they know that if we get along, we'll probably go against them.
They can't stop us, cause we're ready to fight. Trying to brainwash us, but we won't let freedom die. The whole world's brainwashed.
Everybody pick a team, start a riot in the streets.
The whole world's brainwashed.
It's us against them, it ain't you against me.
How did monkeys become people and people turned into sheep? They put fluoride in the water that's keeping us all asleep. Claim they want what's best for us, I find it hard to believe. Cause they've been selling us cigarettes since we was 18. Fake news, fake woke, distract and divide. You're either right or you're left, or you're black or you're white. Big tech don't need a microchip to hack in your life, cause the phone inside your pocket is a tracking device. And I don't know what I'm more sick of, rappers or Joe Biden looking like he ate 100 Xanax for dinner. Cause censoring the president and kicking him off Twitter is a bigger threat to freedom than foreign ballistic missiles. You don't trust the police or the government, but you want people giving up their right to own a firearm. Why would you be comfortable if police and the government the only people on the planet with the right to buy a gun? White privilege getting amplified to reinforce division. It convinces white people that they're favored by their skin, and black people getting angry cause they're told they're treated different. So the conflict is between us and never with the system. Let's just have the conversation. Not every liberal is dumb, not all Republicans are racist. The government wants everybody fighting with their neighbors, cause they know that if we get along, we'll probably go against them.
They can't stop us, cause we're ready to fight. Trying to brainwash us, but we won't let freedom die. The whole world's brainwashed.
Everybody pick a team, start a riot in the streets.
The whole world's brainwashed.
It's us against them, it ain't you against me.
Step one. Train the people only to consume. Step two, infiltrate adults with the news. Step three, indoctrinate the children through the schools and the music and the apps on the phones that they use. Step four, separate the right from the left. Step five, separate the white from the black. Step six, separate the rich from the poor. Use religion and equality to separate them more. Step seven, fabricate a problem made a lie. Step eight, put it on the news every night. Step nine, when people start to fight and divide, take control. This is called situational design.
They can't stop us, cause we're ready to fight. Trying to brainwash us, but we won't let freedom die. The whole world's brainwashed.
Everybody pick a team, start a riot in the streets.
The whole world's brainwashed.
It's us against them, it ain't you against me.
Man, yes. All right. And we are back. I'm thinking, is our guest in yet, Denise?
He is. I told him to go and call the guest call-in, and hopefully momentarily he will be in. But the subject matter that he is going to cover, Billy, is going to be off the wall. If we could get him in to calling, because he's calling from Jerusalem, Israel, and the subject matter that he's going to be talking about is the mind of the Black Jew. I know many people out there
yes.
have heard of the book. It provides an analytical outlook on moral and ethical positions of the Orthodox Judaism. And it's told through the lenses of an African-American rabbi. Now, this is what he's going to cover. And the spiritual thought process Jews have behind keeping kosher, Shabbat, praying three times a day. And, you know, I want to tell a little bit about Rabbi Mordecai Yosef Ben Avraham. He is an Orthodox rabbi currently living in Jerusalem, and originally he is from Los Angeles, California. And see, that's my old stomping ground, because that's where I went to high school, Crenshaw High School. And Rabbi Mordecai Yosef Avraham, he was working as an entertainment executive at Warner Brothers, and he was producing music, film, and television. And he had the privilege of learning at the most prestigious yeshivas in Israel, and he had an emphasis. He learned a lot of the Talmudic law, and Rabbi Mordecai, he was a lecturer to thousands upon thousands of people with presentations on Jewish ethics and morality and inspiring our audiences of all backgrounds and denominations.
Oh, okay.
And I know,
okay.
Yes, I know our guest, see, the issue has been always, of course, you know, when you're calling from one point to the next, from the state, from Jerusalem to the United States, it's always kind of like a little bit of an issue with everything. And what he basically is going to probably cover is just the issue that the Black Jews have worldwide on a worldwide scale. And he wanted to address those issues, and he was going to reach out to many of the African Americans in America of the various issues that Black Jewish people face. But right now, if you don't mind, Billy, and if we can go maybe like a commercial, and I will try to see if I can help him get, you know.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's go to commercial break and see if we can get him online. I'm sorry for this, everybody. But maybe some technical things are going on with him. But we'll be right back after this
we'll
commercial.
Be right back. Everybody, for your patience. Back Jamaica Incorporated. givebackjamaica@gmail.com. That is givebackjamaica@gmail.com.
That's it. And we are back. We're back. And I'd like to ask you, Denise, because I know you're in Israel, and you know more about the background, more about their culture. You know more about their culture. So maybe you can give a breakdown, you know. And so some of the people that are not familiar with Israel, you can explain and break it down.
Now, good news. I'm going to try to add Rabbi Mordecai onto my line. If everybody can hold tight, I'm so sorry about this. He is having a problem, an issue with his telephone. And so I will try to add him in so that we could talk. But yes, the culture in Israel, it is a very diverse culture. Many people, they have the idea that the Jews are just one particular race or one particular group. But Israel is a very, very diverse, very unique, diverse culture. There's a lot of European Jews here, a lot of Ethiopian, a lot of different forms of African Jews here. And there's African American Jews here in a very, very big community in Dimona. And I know Rabbi Mordecai, he'll be talking about that, of course. He won't take long. Hopefully I could just get him on after this next commercial, the next commercial break and after the next song. But it is a very interesting project that he is getting started. He's going to be going even to Nigeria, and he's going to be learning a lot of the cultural things with the Igbos. And the Igbos, he's going to explain everything, the connection that it has with the Arab slave trade and the transatlantic slave trade, the African-American connection to Israel. This is going to get so interesting, but I don't want to spoil it. I'm going to try to get him on, and it will be on me after, you know, this next thing. So, got it.
Okay. All right, TJ, what do you got on deck?
All right, we have coming up Mariah Carey, Third World, Bob Marley. You're listening to Billy and Friends, the Chat Reel on the Caribbean Radio Show.
All right. Okay, somebody there?
Yeah, function. We're still here. We are getting these things up and going. We'll be right back. Caribbean Radio Show, the Chat Reel, where you get live real chat, and the topics are Chat Reel.
anyone to succeed, hanging clouds over me, and they can't rise up to make me feel that I don't matter at all. But I refuse to fall to in what I believe or lose faith in my dreams. 'Cause there's a light in me that shines brightly. They can try, but they can't take that away from me.
We are back. I'm sorry, but apparently, I'm sorry, about this. I'm so sorry about the situation. I'm not sure what's going on with Rabbi Malachi, but we're going to talk about some other issues that's going on in the world. Once again, you know, I am very, very sorry. But we're going to talk about the things that the government's doing to everybody at this point in time and all the technology. And this is going to be open call-in at this point in time, but we're going to get the topic started. And what we're going to do actually is talk about some of the things they're doing to control, like Alexis and all these other devices and stuff that they have installed in your TVs, your appliances, and things of that nature. And they're actually trying to monitor your every move. And this is really sad because now you're getting to the point where they can identify a person, whether if he's wearing a mask, they still identify the person just by his walk. And that's scary also. Now, the next step is the digital currencies. That's going to be a real problem. And because of that,
Billy?
That's going to cause, yes.
Billy,
yes.
Excuse me for interrupting. Mordecai, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I'm so sorry for this. He's here.
Well, this,
okay.
You know,
we finally got our guest.
Right here, we're just starting a new topic. All right, let's go. Let's go. All right, let's introduce Mordecai. Come on in.
Okay, Mordecai, he's a rabbi that's coming straight at you from Jerusalem, and we are happy to have him. He is an Orthodox rabbi. He is also the author of the book. Mordecai, you tell them all about it, The Mind of the Black Jew.
First, I want to thank Denise and Billy for having me on this show. It's amazing. It's such an honor to be talking at 3 o'clock in the morning to you guys back in the States. Yeah, greatly miss America. You know, just a little bit about the background of the book. It's just, you know, I wrote the book while, like, actually the book was written before the whole COVID epidemic. And I wrote it from the standpoint of wanting to share a lot of the different changes that I was going through intellectually by learning, and then all the new ideas that I was, you know, like digesting while I was in like these like learning seminaries. It's called a yeshiva, and so I wanted to just like really, you know. I was digesting so much learning, and I wanted to share that with people that I know. And so I wrote this book, and it's available on Amazon. It's titled Mind of the Black Jew, and it's doing pretty well right now. And I guess, I mean, there's so many aspects to touch on in the book, but I would say a basic premise analyzes the perspective of, you know, how the human eye and the human sensories, you know, based off of like how science is saying right now, sees connects like less than 1% of reality. Like the human eye, we look around us, but the eye is only observing like only literally 1% of reality. And science is saying that there's a whole 99% happening around us. And so this is very similar to the traditions for thousands of years in the Torah, where the Torah says that there's a physical world that we live in, but it's extremely limited. You know, we only see a very limited grasp of it, and there's a whole reality happening around us. And so God created the Torah as a navigational tool for us to be able to get from one place to another, to make right decisions, to, you know, connect to lasting happiness, to connect to lasting pleasure, to separate ourselves from negativity or things that are harmful to us. Like, so there's like, I mean, on a basic level, I'm using this as a basic example. There's this idea of certain foods that we should eat and we shouldn't eat. And the basis of the food is not just the quality of the meat or say the spices or whatever. It's also takes into account like how those foods affect us on a spiritual level. So there's certain foods that the Torah says we should eat and we shouldn't eat. And so from that basis, it's taking into account of not just the physical nourishment of the body, but also the spiritual effect of these things. Because, you know, every human being has a body and they have a soul. And so the body would represent kind of like this limited perception of a person. And then there's this soul, which represents this expanded reality of who an individual is. And, And how that individual, you know, is functioning in this world. I don't know if like you guys understood what I was saying, but that's kind of like the thought around the book.
Yeah, so that's the book. Now, Rabbi Mordecai, there were a lot of people who were excited about you coming on, and I'm sure that they're listening in right now because they had a lot of questions about the project that you're doing with the African-American diaspora. And I know you're going to get into that because that was the part I was excited about, the history, the Igbos, the transatlantic slave trade, the Arab slave trade, the other things, you know, the projects that you're into. I mean, they're just really, really, really good projects and everything. And it ties into what you're teaching with your book, because I know it goes with a course and everything. Can you tell us a little bit about these things?
Yeah, so we formed a organization called African American Jews in Diaspora. And this organization is pretty much is focused on a two different fronts, like two basic fronts, which is one is providing an education, a re-education about what Black history is. You know, a lot of times often we see African American history, Black history in America from the standpoint of like slavery and everything that happened after that. Through the studies of the Torah and learning with different rabbis, you know, I've come to realize or come understanding that the history of African Americans, you know, goes back much, much further than just what we've experienced in you know, the history books in North America, but on the spiritual level, you know, there's tribes that the African Americans came from that were descendants of the Israelites, that would be considered, I guess, Jewish or, you know, Hebrews or Israelite tribes that descend from, you know, Israel, like 12 tribes. And so many of those tribes, I mean, it's a big history. So like, just to go back a little bit, so you have the story of Abraham, and Abraham had a son, Isaac, and Isaac, you know, had two sons, and one of which was Jacob. And Jacob, you know, eventually married four wives, and these four wives that he had, they have 12 tribes, and, you know, they're living, you know, functioning, whatever. And then one of the sons that he had was sold into what, you know, the brothers were against him. I mean, I'm not trying on the biblical narrative, but I'm just trying to give a context. And he had a son that went into Egypt. You know, his brothers went against him. They sold him, whatever. He went into Egypt. And so his brothers go into Egypt. I mean, the brother Yosef goes into Egypt. And eventually the rest of the family eventually comes there, and they're in Egypt, whatever. Long story short, generations later, they leave Egypt. You know, this guy, prophet, Moshe Rabbeinu, comes and he takes them out of Egypt, and they go on Mount Sinai. It's a whole story. I mean, I'm not trying to give a biblical history because it's like we'd be here for an hour, but the point is just saying they leave Egypt, they go on Mount Sinai, and they form a nation, right? And so this nation is designed by the context of 12 tribes. And this is the functioning system of this community. And so later on, this nation, you know, many different characters emerged. One of the characters was King David. And King David comes along and he has a kingdom. He's a king, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he has a son named Solomon. And so Solomon he takes over this kingship, and he's in Israel at this point. And they have this temple, you know, and it's a huge place. All the nations of the world come, they celebrate, they pray, all types of things. And King Solomon passes away, and certain things happen, and this temple eventually is destroyed, right? Generations later, they rebuild this temple, and a lot of things are going on. The first temple, there was a war that happened, and it was with the Babylonians, and, you know, whatever. And the temple, it destroys. Generations later, they build another temple. There was a guy named King Herod. He built a temple. Then there's another war that happens with the Romans, right? And then the temple's destroyed. Millions of these people who are called Israelites are sold into slavery by the Romans. They get sold into Africa, many of which end up on the west coast of Africa, and places like, you know, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, places like Angola, different places like this. And so some of these people are known in those regions as tribes, like, say, for example, one of which is like the Igbo tribe, right? And so these people exist inside of, people exist inside of Africa, whatever. Transatlantic slave trade happens, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years later, like probably close to several hundred years later. Transatlantic slave trade happens, so the Africans want to get in on, you know, this business. And so they say that they took a lot of the people who were considered Canaanites that were living inside of Africa, and they sold them to, you know, Europeans, right? And so these Europeans, you know, sold them or purchased them, brought them to North America. And so this is the transatlantic slave trade. Now, they not only, they went to other places too. They went to like places like South America and things like that. But the conversation that I'm talking about are the ones that specifically came to North America. And the ones that came to North America, according to the traditions of the Igbos, traditions of the American slave traders, because they have documentation of where these people came from. And along with, you know, genetic DNA, whatever, the high majority of African Americans come from Nigeria and or have a strong Nigerian influence in their DNA. And so this is the basis of these people who were sold into slavery being in North America. So recently, there was in 2014, the leader of the religious community in Israel is a man by the name of Rabbi Chaim Kanetsky, and he recently passed away, like probably like whatever, he passed away like a year ago. Anyways, he passed away like, you know, last year.
The Lubavitcher Rabbi. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, he's not Lubavitcher, but he's a Haredi rabbi. But let me chime in for a second.
Okay. And, you know, in talking about that, I want to take you a little bit further on the book in terms of the mind of a black Jew. I know there are some situations that's going on in Israel, and I think, Denise, you know what I'm talking about, in terms of the Jewish, the lighter Jews or the white Jews or what have you. Can you talk about that, and then we get back to the situation where we talk about the different foods, and we can take and go back. We'll keep that in mind what you were talking about, because I think that's important also. But these are kind of things that kind of stuck out as you're speaking, and then also the book itself. So can you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah. So for example, like, so that's the point exactly. That's what I was getting to, was the idea that he made a ruling that the tribes in Africa, on the west coast of Africa, were part of the Jewish community. And, I mean, there's obviously certain ceremonial processes that they had to do to be reacclimated into the mainstream world. But that was a ruling that was given by what would be considered, because there's a lot of different, I mean, there's Jews, when the temple destroyed, there's Jews that went all over the world. There's Jews that went into the Middle East. There's Jews, as we're saying, went into Africa. There's Jews that went into Europe and, you know, just all over the world Jews went. So today, when you say when you see Jewish people in North America, a lot of the Jews would be considered white because they're lighter complected. If you went to South America, a lot of the Jews will be a little bit more tan, you know, they would be considered more light complected. If you went to Africa, you would see Jews that are very dark, you know, because the environments over hundreds of years, you know, played a role in how, you know, some people intermixed, some people intermarried, you know, all these different types of things. But the traditions of Judaism still continue on, you know? So a lot of the external aspects of how people lived or whatever. So the connection is saying that the African-Americans that are descendants of the Igbo tribes are identified as being Jewish. And so the focus now is being able to connect the African-American experience to Africa and through the spiritual aspect of Africa, being able to connect it to the 12 tribes of Israel and to be able to connect it to the Torah and then and even a geographical place of the physical Israel.
Right.
I don't know if that answers your question.
In terms of the Ashkenazi's views, I know that that's a big topic in some people's areas in the world. So what is your take on that?
What specific aspect of it, so I could be accurate?
Well, I'm just saying the Ashkenazi Jews seems to be different.
Like the world, Billy, looking at Jews as being just Ashkenazi.
Yes. That's, I guess you put it that way.
Yeah.
I'll be defined as African or black, right? Because of how America, you know, created these labels. But the thing is, it's like when you look at television, a lot of black and African-American people say, hey, you know what? Television and media are only depicting one aspect of our society. You know, they're not showing all the different aspects of the, you know, like we had TV shows like The Cosby Show we had other really amazing shows like in the like 90s that really showed black culture, you know, in different ways. And so we don't really have a lot of those types of shows today. We have shows that are really, you know, like these reality shows are very sensationalized, and they show one aspect of black culture, right? So it's like the same thing with like Judaism. There's a portrayal of Judaism that, you know, Judaism is a white people's religion, and it has, you know, these people and they're Ashkenazim, and it's used in a political dynamic, you know, around here in Israel, and they say Israel is apartheid state, and I really personally, I'm not so into the politics of Israel. I'm really into the spirituality of Israel, but I'm just answering the question that there's a portrayal that Israel is, or Judaism in general is something that's, it's a white people's religion, right? And in North America, because of immigration, there's a big percentage of the Jews that exist in America are Ashkenaz, are what we consider from Europe descent. But there are different types of Jews. There's Persian Jews. I grew up in Los Angeles. There's a humongous Persian community there, and different places have Syrian communities and Iraqi communities, whatever. But the point is saying the way the media is utilizing it or weaponizing the Jewish experience, they kind of focus on that aspect. But here in Israel, Ashkenazi Jews are considered like the minority in comparison to people who look like me in Judaism.
If I may interject, Rabbi, this is TJ. If I may interject, not to be make a joke of it, but, you know, in the Bible it says that they walked around in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, the Hebrews, during the Exodus. And as hot as it is in the desert, to me, it doesn't seem logical that they would be only Caucasian-complected Jews, because I don't know anybody that can stay in the sun that long and not... You know, I mean, people, that misnomer, I'm agreeing with you on that part. that misnomers. They think that all Jews, because of World War II, are of European ancestry, and they're not. Am I correct?
Right.
You know, yeah, I mean, just as a, that was the original point, is that, like, when you look at African Americans descend from the 12 tribes, and they descend from, our history is connected to Africa, in the slave trade of Africa was specifically focused on people who were defined as Canaanites or Hebrews, and those people descended from, originally came from Israel. So, like, you know, like, I mean, it is what it is, but it's not limited to African Americans who came through the transatlantic slave trade. It also encompasses people who fled to Europe, right, who eventually looked white, or people who came from the Middle East who look more olive skin, you know what I mean, type of thing. But the original people who were in Egypt would be considered black by American standards. Back then, they didn't have such terms, you know what I mean? But, like, by American standards, the people who were in Egypt, the people who stood on Mount Sinai, the people who were descendants of Abraham were all extremely dark people based off of the equator and the weather conditions and what their skin and their melanin had to be like just to survive in those type of territories.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, and then shortly after this, we had to go to a commercial break. But do you think that a lot of the problems in Israel is because of some of the parties that's there? I mean, they're constantly seem like they're always at war back and forth with Palestine. So what's your take on it? I mean, I see it from a perspective of being in the United States and not really living in Jerusalem. You know, so that's where I'm coming from. So. Or Israel. So what would your take be on that?
You know, the thing is, like, you know, I'm American, right? I've been living here for several years in Israel, but, you know, I grew up in America. And the thing is, I'm still trying to figure out the war in Iraq, you know, when they said that there was weapons of mass destruction, right? I'm still trying to figure out.
And we know that was a
how long?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, going into Afghanistan.
Yeah.
In Afghanistan, right? Like, we're trying to figure out. Like,
yeah.
My father, for example, when he was in college, he got drafted to the Vietnam War. He ended up not going, right, because the war was finished by the time he was there. But I'm still trying to understand that. I had a grandfather who actually fought in the Korean War, and I mean, I knew my grandfather for a very short amount of time because he passed away when I was very young. But my dad told me that my grandfather had lost a lung because they were, like, in swamps and these different types of things. So, you know, when you talk about, like, say, for example, black history or black culture, you know, because that's where I come from, you know, I don't think any of us really understand any of these wars that we experienced, you know, type of a thing. Like, we just responded because the state told us we had to do it. If we didn't do it, like what you saw with Muhammad Ali, like, put in jail if they didn't participate, right? So I think the same thing goes over here. I don't think the average Israeli who lives in Israel understands the government here. I don't think the government here is controlled, in essence, by the Israeli population. You know, I think there's an elite class that exists here, and that elite class is the same thing that exists in places like, you know, Saudi Arabia. There's an elite class in all the different Middle Eastern countries that they interact with each other secretly, sometimes visibly, and they make decisions or they have conflicts. And I think on the ground, the way that they mobilize people is through propaganda, right? So,
okay,
you know, what's going on?
Let's hold that thought.
So what's going on here in Israel?
Let's hold that thought. And when we come back from commercial break, then I want to get back to that. And I'm going to tell you my thoughts on what's going on in the United States and the wars that's been going on. So let's go ahead. TJ, you want to take us to the commercial break?
Right on, Billy. You're okay. Listening to the Caribbean Radio Show with Billy and Friends on the chat reel with Rabbi Mordecai is our guest this week.
And we will be back.
From author Dr. Denise Gotatis comes a self-help guide that will give you valuable information about the world around you in ways never imagined. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creation. Available on Amazon. In this must-read book, you will learn about your importance in the world and the metaphysical universe around you. You will be introduced to the Metaphysical God who has a relationship with you and those around you. Whether you are aware of this or not, you come into contact with Him daily. He is omnipresent metaphysically. He is in and outside of His creation. And what does a metaphysical God have to do with you and the creation around you? You are a very big piece of a huge puzzle. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creator from author Dr. Denise Gotatis is available on Amazon. Order your copy right now.
I want to stress, everybody,
thank
get
you.
That book from Amazon, The Mind of the Jew by Rabbi Mordecai.
Jew.
Not only my book. I would rather, you know, yeah, he's a guest. And I want to stress getting his book, that Mind of the Black Jew is a very good book. I read the first, like, you know, three fourth chapters of Mordecai because you let us read a little bit. When I had the Ariel Thora talk. But yes, I stress that.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Rabbi Mordecai. Let me ask you this. Where can they purchase the book at?
Say it one more time. Where's what?
Where can they purchase
the book?
Where's
the book available? Oh, you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon now.
Okay.
You know, the thing is, I wanted to, go ahead,
Okay, this is what we're back, and we're going to catch up a little bit because some people might be just joining us, but the lines are open, and we're actually talking with Rabbi Malachi, Mordecai. Okay, so let's go back to where we're at, and I was telling you exactly what I think in since being in the United States, and you've been a part of the culture in the United States as well. But the wars and stuff of these natures is all planned wars. They're all made-up wars. Every war they go to, it just benefits the elites. And I think that's pretty much everywhere. Everybody knows that that there was no boogeyman. Like there was a bin Laden, but he wasn't behind any of it. And then you look at Gaddafi. You look at the other one that was over in Iraq, this guy didn't have any nuclear weapons, man. This is all an agenda. And if you look at what happened to the towers, and I seen that when I seen it day one, it didn't settle well with me because the way those things came down, they came down like casinos in Vegas when they're taking and destroying a old one, bringing it down. It's the same thing. And the administration was a part of that situation. I don't care what nobody says. All of them were involved in that takedown. And they had people taking and hating Iraq because of bin Laden. So that was further thing from the truth. And Omar Gaddafi, he had nothing to do with it. The only thing Omar Gaddafi wanted to do was trade with Africa, currency. They wanted to go back. And the United States wasn't having it. And also Saddam was a part of that whole situation too. They were trying to break away from what was going on. Because if you notice our history with the media, they always give you their view and their takes on everything. But you never hear the other side because they want them voice their opinions. They won't let them in to speak. So this is the same thing I believe that is happening also Israel and places like that, because they're constantly going back and forth, warring with one another. And actually, they were asked to come in there, what, in 49, 50, 51, somewhere around then, when the Jews arrived in Israel? Wasn't it around that time?
Yeah, but but the thing is that they're taking into account when analyzing things as it relates to Jewish and Jewish people. You know, when we look at the history of, again, I'm African American, and you know, my great grandparents, you know, fought against slavery, and they fought against, I mean, not my great great grandparents, but I'm saying like all the way back to America, but my great great grandparents fought against segregation and discrimination and Jim Crow laws and these types of things. And today, it's like a really like disgusting thing to think back on it, right? To think back that like people were treated in the way that African Americans were treated in, you know, the United States, right? Because no one, everyone's ashamed of it. They're doing all these different reforms and educational changes and all these different things institutional wise. But the thing is, Jews were in essence the black people, as it relates to America, in every part of the globe for literally thousands of years, right? Jews, because they were a minority, were treated a specific way. They were ostracized from society. They were abused and taken advantage of by laws, right? And it was institutionalized racism, you know, existed against, you know, Jewish people, you know, and that's just because Jewish people are the longest living minority group in human history, right? They've existed since the time of the Babylonians. They've existed since the time of the Egyptian empires and all those things, and they still exist today. And so when we analyze the Jewish experience, we have to look at it from the context of being this minority group that people were trying to say, just go away, just join in with everyone else. Why do you guys keep going on? And so because of this fortitude to God in this mission that was given on Mount Sinai, everywhere Jews have went, they've brought a lot of blessings, and then they've also received a lot of judgment, right? And so Israel, being formed in 1948, was not formed by religious people. It was something that was people who had Jewish backgrounds and people who were American and people who were British and other different groups, you know, and they have their own agenda, right? And so there are Jews that live in Israel, but they're here mostly in Israel to keep the Torah and the Holy Land. That's why they want to be here. Now, there are other people who have Jewish descent that aren't necessarily in that mindset, right? There are people who are not into the Torah. They're not following the Torah per se. Place for safety, you know? It's a place that it's a safety and a refuge because of these abuses that I've been speaking about, or I'm speaking about for thousands of years, you know? So now it's a place where the Jewish people can say, like, hey, you know what? We could have the right to defend ourselves. We have a military. If certain things happen, we can respond in a certain way and deal with them. So that's what it is. Now, is there a whole bigger political dynamic? Is this whatever? But the dynamic of this land, and it's much more than this land biblically. It's not just limited to the borders that you see now. Like, it encompasses like Lebanon and other places from a biblical standpoint. But the basis of understanding why in Israel exists is because of the cruelty and the abuses that have went on for thousands of years. Like, a lot of people want to just peg it on the Holocaust, but that's a very recent tragedy. But there's abuses and cruelties that have been going on for thousands of years against this minority group. And in fact, I would say that much of what the African Americans experienced in North America was a byproduct of, you know, European thought that was expressed against Jews as well. And so they were already fine-tuned on how to abuse and deal with a minority group and to break them down and to reprogram them and make them want to, you know, assimilate into this idea, that came through the relationship with, you know, with Jewish people. Now, that's not to say that they weren't individual Jews that were a part of things or maybe even a part of the slave trade or different things like this, for sure. But I'm thinking as a collective group of people, this is the experience that the Jewish people have experienced and responded to.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. What do
and
you
now,
think,
one thing about it, Billy, one thing I've noticed, though, that, you know, that's why, I mean, the Jewish people assimilated in every, in the four corners of the earth. That's why it's such a diversity. And
yeah.
What I got from what Rabbi Mordecai said, you know, and that's why people can't really place a particular race on the group of people because spreading out from one place, it expanded to the four corners. If people expand into the four corners, they are going to be different nationalities, different races, and they assimilated, just what Rabbi Mordecai said. Because, you know, I've seen so many people, they get to where they think that the Jews are just one color of people, and that's kind of like a deception in a way, because when you think about it, if everybody go to four corners, they're going to assimilate with the people, the societies and everything and the peoples of that place. So yeah, that's very good. I got that out of that. I'm learning something, Rabbi Mordecai.
This is what I would ask in terms of what message would you have for the blacks that are throughout the United States and maybe throughout the world. What message would you give them in terms of heritage? What would be that information where people can understand and wake up?
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, the message that I'm bringing out is not my own personal, you know, mantra. It's something. It's just, it's part of Jewish history, and the focus that I'm focused on is people who are part of the transatlantic slave trade. It's not black people as a whole. You know, it's like there's a lot of people identify as being black in North America, so you have, you know, people who are black because that's what they were called. They were called Negro. They were called, you know, black, you know, African American, whatever, different points that, you know, America decided to define them as. So the people who came through the transatlantic slave trade, we're saying that those people have a connection to specific tribes in Africa that were identified as being different than the rest of the Africans. So Africa as a whole, I wouldn't say has, you know, I wouldn't say that they have really so much a connection to the 12 tribes of Israel, right? Or people in America who call themselves black, I wouldn't say that they have. I'm speaking specifically about specific tribes that exist to this day who still practice Judaism in the continent of Africa, and also people who were from those tribes that were in a transatlantic slave trade and came to North America, seeing that many of them, I'm not saying 100%, but many of them, a high percentile of them, are from, you know, say the Igbo tribes and different tribes in different placements in Ghana and Senegal and different places that were considered the outsiders, and that's why their ancestors were the ones who were sold to the North Americas and in some cases even South America.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I have to look at it and agree. I think that we need to identify basically what, you know, our ancestors, where they came from, you know, to identify, to tie everything in together. But I want to go back a little bit when we're talking about the different foods and stuff like that. And I think I agree with you wholeheartedly. A lot of people have turned to vegan because of what's going on with the food. You know, now, are you a vegan?
No, I'm not a vegan, but I do appreciate it. And veganism as a whole does have a place inside of the Torah. You know, the tradition teaches us that before the flood of Noah, before that flood, most of the people were, the world was pretty much all vegan. They just kind of like ate plants. They didn't really eat animals.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until after the flood of Noah that God gave permission for people to eat meat, but under certain conditions. Like it couldn't be an animal that was living, you know, it had to be an animal that if it was killed, it had to be killed in a specific type of a way that the animal didn't go through this painful process of death or whatever. And so today we refer to that process as kosher meat, right? So there's a specific process on how to deal with meat in animals and doing that and but the thing is, and you know, not to freak you guys out, but even in the tradition of Judaism, every entity has a spark of God, right? So
so even
things like rocks or minerals, right, or even plants, and even animals, all have this aspect of godliness within them, right? So when we're eating food, it's not just eating food from the standpoint of like, you know, I'm hungry, or even say God says kill the animal this way. What we're really doing is elevating the souls and the spirits inside of those animals that are godly to a higher level, right? So the plants, they we're elevating, like in essence, like if you have minerals, for example, right? Like and use certain spices, whatever, different minerals, whatever, those entities through eating food in the way that the eating food the way that the Torah says we should eat, which is like certain blessings, and we prepare ourselves and we pray the food in a specific way, that you elevate, we're elevating one kingdom to another, right? So there's like four kingdoms. There's a mineral kingdom, plant kingdom, animal kingdom, and human kingdom. And so as we're eating food, we're elevating the sparks of a particular kingdom to a higher level, right? So like, for example, if I'm eating plants, right? If I'm eating plants, like I'm vegan, if a person has in mind that there's godliness inside of these plants and there's a holiness inside these plants, that eating and doing certain blessings that the Torah tells us, the sages tell us to do, we can elevate that spark of all those sparks of holiness inside of the plants into the level of animals, right? And even to get more weird, you could say, when I say weird in terms of what you would normally learn, like traditional education, even animals, we have the ability to elevate those sparks into a level of humanness, if that makes sense. We have the ability to take an animal and do and elevate that soul of an animal into the level of a human where they have free will, right? Because that's the whole point, is like we're the mankind is the highest kingdom, because God gave us this ability to have free will, to think. Animals don't have the same free will that humans do. They don't have the same intellect that humans do. And like, say, for example, plants don't have the same intellect as animals do, right? And then minerals don't have the same intellect that plants have. So the whole idea is about elevating the sparks of God that exist inside of food, and ultimately elevating ourselves as well, right? And so that's the context of eating food. It's not just the food itself. It's the holiness inside of the food. It's the sparks of God that is inside of food. And so God gives us a certain way on how to deal with that. And that's why we slaughter animals a certain way. That's why we do certain blessings a certain way. That's why we eat certain foods at certain times of the year and other foods at another time of the year. Because we're in the business of elevating the holy sparks that exist inside of food.
Okay, let me ask you this for our audience that are listening: how in a Jewish tradition, how would you go about maybe slaughtering an animal, how would you go about that? Because we all know it's got a spirit, and if it's dying violently, that has a lot of effect on what's going in your body. So how do you guys go about actually doing that to make sure you're getting the best and not the murderous part of killing animals? So how do you guys go about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a specific frame of studying that goes along with how to properly, you know, slaughter an animal or allow an animal to go into a transition in terms of, you know, one state of living to the state of not. And, you know, I'm not an expert in that particular place, you know, but I will say that the goal of a person who does the slaughtering is to utilize the traditions of the Torah, which is based off of the slaughtering being very quick and basically no pain to the animal whatsoever, because that process of the animal not suffering and bleeding to death and, you know, or having a tremendous amount of fear or whatever, it affects the quality of the meat itself. You know, like if the animal is terrified when it's dying, you know, we believe in this idea that there's a physical, and I spoke about this earlier, there's a physical and a spiritual aspect to everything. And on a physical level, a person, I'm just using a human being for example, on a physical level, there's this idea of, you know, how I look. You know, I may be in great shape. I may have great muscles. I may have a radiant skin or whatever. But then on a spiritual level, I could be dealing with a lot of negativity. You know, I could be dealing with a lot of aspects that are very impure. You know, the way that I'm living spiritually, you know, can attract a lot of aspects of things that aren't so great, right? So you could meet someone and they look physically great, but their energy is just so negative. And I think all of us have had those experiences in our life, that we met somebody or we went somewhere that looked physically great, but the energy was just so bad, right? And so the idea of dealing with animals and eating animals, we want to make sure that not only does the animal physically look great, but the spiritual energy, because we accepted that the animals have an aspect of godliness within them, right? So, and that's why we should treat animals a specific way. We should treat animals with kindness. We should, you know, look out for them, in some cases protect if needed from harm. But the point is saying the whole idea around the animals that we physically eat, we want them to physically be in a great position, right? And then also we want them to be in a spiritual position that's great. So we don't want to put an animal through suffering. You know, we don't want to put an animal through pain. And we want the animal to be at its highest peak as it makes that transition from being alive to being, you know, not alive.
Okay. And on that note, we're talking with Rabbi Mordechai Yosef Ben, and we're talking about the black Jews and also on the nutrition of the culture meats. And before we go to commercial break, let me ask you one quick question. Where would one, and I'm a little naive to this situation, but where would one find the culture meats in stores around the United States? Where would that be at?
You know, it's a great question. The easiest way to do it is to look for stores that identify themselves as kosher stores, meaning like there's kosher supermarkets that exist. Wherever there's Jews at, there has to be, because Jews, you know, we're only allowed to eat kosher meat. We're only allowed to eat kosher food and kosher ingredients in general, not just meat, but just all ingredients in general. There's a process to make sure that the purity of that food is there. So, yeah, any kosher store, you could Google it. and I'm sure it'll pop up in any major city in America.
Okay, bet. Okay, for our listeners, they can call in and also hit one of the two. I'm not really clear on it yet, but I think it was one. But I want to also come back. You're listening to the Chat Reel show with Billy and Friends. And, TJ, I want to know what you have lined up. And we'll come back. We're going to have an open forum with all of us so we can chime in and talk with Rabbi. And we'll be right back. But, TJ, what do you got for us?
Coming up, we've got Third World, Bob Marley, and Stevie Wonder. Our guest this week is Rabbi Mordecai, author of Mind of a Black Jew, available on Amazon. Get it while it's going. It's a hot book. You're listening to Billy and Friends on the Caribbean Radio Show.
Mm-hmm.
Caribbean Radio Show, The Chat Reel, where you get live real chat and the topics are Chat Reel.
Okay. Introducing Caribbean down. Radio Show, The Chat Reel with Billy and Friends. And now, here is your host, Billy Tappin.
And we're back with the show. And thank you. We're back with the show. And even for all the listeners out there that wish to come on board, they can actually just hit one. And they'll be able to enter the room. So if you're listening, we're at the point in time where we're having the live chat call in, and we're going to take and pass it around. But you are listening to Rabbi Mordecai Yosef Ben, and he is author of the Black Jewish or the book.
The Mind
song.
Of
what's the name of it? The Minds of a Black Jew. Sorry about that. And you can get that on Amazon.
Right.
We've had a very, very nice conversation with this gentleman. He has been full of knowledge. And I can kind of get more of an understanding of what this whole Jewish situation is all about. And from that point, I think we get to asking. Anybody has any questions in the group, feel free to chime in. And let's see what we can come up with. Anybody?
Yeah,
there?
I guess
okay.
I will. Julie? Yeah. Well, I could chime in because go ahead, Julie. Okay.
I was just gonna say the only question that I have. I'm not real educated in Judaism. I just need to explain to me what the Torah is. I don't know exactly what the Torah is.
So, there's different ways to answer that question. The Torah itself, you could say, is a legal document, which, you know, has obviously many pages that conveys God's relationship to the Jewish people or the Israelites, their relationship of how they should live, the perspective, the history. At the same time, there's many lessons and principles that are applicable to all the nations that exist in the world. It has been an inspirational source for different religions like Christianity and Islam. All of them refer back to the New Testament, the Old Testament, and the structure of the Old Testament, and ideas of Adam, the ideas of, you know, a week having 7 days, and the principles of, you know, things like staying away from evil and doing good, and many other things that exist inside of the Torah. The world has benefited from, and it formed religions and inspired governments and such things, but in essence, it's a codified legal document between God and the Israelites on how to live.
Okay.
And what their mission is.
I thought the Torah. Oh. The Torah's a. Yeah. My thought was the Torah, you know, it was the first 5 books of the Bible. Sum it up.
Oh, okay.
Rabbi Mordecai,
okay.
Am I right? Yeah. That's
yeah,
correct,
I mean,
Rabbi.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but I just, yeah. When someone says, what is the Torah itself, it's like, that's, you know, it's teachings, you know, and I'm saying that, what are those teachings? I mean, I could have gave, like, another type of an answer that, you know, I'm just
like
trying to
like a set of principles or something.
That it's a legal document. You know, it's
okay.
Like, you know, if you go into like if you go into a partnership in business, right? You know, and you go into a certain partnership, that there's certain stipulations on that relationship. You know, a person has to do this, another person has to do that, one party has to do this, another party does that. And it's in great detail, right? And so that relationship between God and Israel, you know, is outlined, you know, what we should do, how we should live, how we should eat, how we understand time, how we understand our existence, you know, how we get married and how we have children, how we raise them. Everything is outlined, that how we deal with other people who are not from our nation, these types of things. So that's there, and it's a very vast thing. It's the five Moses, but it's also the Torah encompasses like the Tanakh, you know, it encompasses, you know, things like Psalms and, you know, the Book of Esther, you know, Book of Ruth, all these things, you know. And it's so vast and so deep, but it's a huge body of work that allows us to understand this narrative of Israel in history and their relationship with different experiences that we could take and utilize in our life today.
Okay. Well,
okay, thank you.
Let me do this. Yeah. TJ, you have anything you'd like to ask Rabbi?
This may be a little off the track, but I'd like to know the difference between a Hasidic Jew and an Orthodox Jew. Very interesting to me.
So, So the idea, so the thing is like this, is that the Torah there's a lot of ways that you can interpret how to express the laws of the Torah itself. You know, like, for example, like, you know, like a person dressing like modest, right? So that's like a principle that our sages were able to like bring, you know, into life, you know, like in terms of expressing that as being a principle. But the thing is, it's like how that's expressed is different in different places in the world, right? And how that's understood is different in places of the world, right? And so...
Like being a Presbyterian and
like,
a Baptist, right?
Rabbi? I would say that idea, you have to think about... Most of the ideas that we see in the world that are spiritual, that are in a monotheistic frame, were greatly influenced by the Torah and the Israelites and the Jewish people. You know, like that. I mean, like, so when we see different expressions of an idea or denominations, that comes from us. So, you know, Hasidic Jews, you know, they influenced by a certain frame of understanding the Torah. Now, Orthodoxy, they would fall underneath that umbrella as well, right? But it's just the way that they express their Orthodoxy. And the thing is, you got to think about it, Orthodoxy is not really a Israelite term, right? God gave us 613 commandments on Mount Sinai. It wasn't until later generations, and I'm talking like Moses received the Torah 33 years ago. Like, so we're talking thousands of years, right? And much of the Torah was being expressed by Abraham that was alive 4,000 years ago, you know? So the thing is to say that, you know, with the different ways that the Torah has progressed, like late 1800s, you know, early 1900s, these types of things, this is where the idea of Reform Judaism comes in, and later Conservative Judaism. So before then, there was none of these things. It was just Judaism, you know. It was just the Torah expressed through the Talmud, and these types of things. So the Orthodox is like very much not really necessarily a Jewish term, but it's something that like we use today because there's been like new ideas that have been invented, you know, called, you know, Reform and reform in conservative. So now we have to say, oh, no, we're Orthodox. But it's more of a Christian term than an actual Jewish one.
Right. Okay. We got you. You're right on.
Now,
right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Let me ask you this real quick before we go to another break. Where are you speaking at? Do you got any dates that we can announce where you're going to be at? Anytime in the United States?
The thing is, right now, like, I'm in Jerusalem, and I'm planning to go to Africa for a period of time and spend time with a lot of the different tribes that, and that's where my ancestors, come from. But, I want to really learn a lot of traditions. I'm working with a lot of universities in the United States in the area of religious studies and providing a lot of, social justice-based content or educational materials from a Jewish perspective, because much of Jewish history as it relates to Black people and African Americans has been very much concealed in the United States. And it was a form of keeping African Americans in a very limited perspective about who they were and their origins and their connection to godliness. We were in America very much taught to see ourselves as, in many cases, in our inception, not even fully even human, right? And America came, and European America wanted to utilize so many of the innovations that came from our people. They wanted to utilize things like Hebrew, things like democracy, this idea of having a democratic environment, and many other ideas that stem from our value system and our ethical system that comes from our Torah that my ancestors received on Mount Sinai. They wanted to utilize it to create this country, or they did utilize it. And so when the transatlantic slave trade happened, and they knew, the people who captured us knew that we were descendants of Israel. We were the Hebrews that existed in Africa. They knew that when they brought us here. And so there was a very focused effort to remove that history from us, and not only to remove that history from us, but also just our humanness, that who we were as human beings, because America couldn't justify its narrative of having a country with Judeo-Christian values at the same time enslaving Hebrews, enslaving Israelites, enslaving people who were considered, descendants of, tribes that were in Africa and here, and brought them here. So that would have been a very big contradiction to the thing. Now, with that being said, a person who's hearing that could say, oh, but there were Jews who also were part of the slave trade. It's true. It's 100% true. It's 100% true that there were Jews. But the thing is, the way that the system has worked since the destruction of the temple, the second temple, Jews are fragmented all over planet Earth, different places, and they developed different customs, and they didn't even know up until very recent, since Israel, in many cases, the state that I'm in right now, in 1948, when that state was established, there were Jews that never even knew these people, like the Ethiopian Jews, didn't even know about European Jewry. They were shocked to see that there was people that looked white, or what we call white, that were Jewish. They were shocked. They never even knew such a thing existed. So there was people who were fragmented. So some of those people end up, being a part of the slave trade, whether they were slaves themselves or they were hired help, by whatever governments or people they were part of to also administer ideas of slave trade or whatnot. So the point is just saying that's a social justice issue that I'm very passionate about, and I feel like it's important to the world. It's important to the Jewish world. It's important to America. It's important to Black history. So I'm going to go to Africa and do a lot of that research, more in-depth research there physically, and I'm going to do a lot of teaching there as well. I'm going to learn a lot. My focus there is to go to learn, but I'm going to also do a lot of speaking in places like Nigeria, in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, in Botswana, and different places like Kenya, places like this, where there's a lot of, you know, people who identify as Jews, but there's people who identify as Jews throughout the continent. So I don't have any exact dates, but we have a bunch of holidays coming up that I plan on, after those holidays, going to Nigeria and the rest of it in Africa that's Jewish-inspired.
Okay. All right, so what
wow.
we're going to do,
informative.
We want to know, yeah, we want to know exactly where what you got going on. Let us know that we can get prepared to get your information out so people could know and follow you wherever you go.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, if you get dates
yeah,
and stuff like that, shoot it to us and we'll take and send it out. So at this point in time,
yeah,
we're going
that.
To go to a commercial break, TJ, if you will. What do we got going on your end? And you can kind of ride this out. So Mordecai, stay with us as we go to the commercial break.
Okay.
You're on the Caribbean Radio Show with Billy and friends. We have Stevie Wonder and Ziggy Marley coming up. Stay tuned. Our guest this week is Rabbi Mordecai, author of The Mind of a Black Jew on Amazon. Get it while they got it. It's going fast.
And don't forget the music. And we're back. So at this point, we're going to close everything out. Rabbi Mordechai, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. We had actually a great time. We had kind of a rough beginning. But once again, you're more than welcome to come back. And we'd like to see what you're doing. Keep us posted. And any last words before we get out of here? We got about maybe about 5 minutes. Do maybe a couple minutes on you, Rabbi. Any closing notes?
I would say, like, you know, there's a famous rabbi who passed away years ago named Noah Babich Rebbe, and he said he was quoted on a particular point that was a very pervasive idea in Hasidic, you know, Judaism, which is every single person was born the moment. The moment that a person was born was a moment that God decided that the world couldn't live without their uniqueness and their unique contribution to humanity as a whole. And I would say that the main focus of the Torah in the Jewish people in general, or should be, I'm not saying it's always expressed, is this idea of discovering really who we are, right? We live in a society that gives us labels of color and social status and education and all these different labels that society gives us that really don't have any godly basis to it, right? And often we identify ourselves as that social security numbers, all types of stuff. But the goal is to really, you know, ourselves, to really look at our lives and to look at us, ourselves as human beings before all these definitions, and to find out, like, why did God bring me into this world? You know, why did my soul have to come into this reality through these two people? You know, maybe they're your parents or whatnot, but these two people that, you know, had, you know, intercourse in essence, and I was conceived and my soul came into this body and now I have this existence. So why did God do that? Like, what is the purpose of that? And on top of that, what makes me unique in this world? You know, there's billions and billions of people. What makes me unique in this world? And what is it that I'm supposed to contribute to humanity? What is my legacy, my spiritual legacy supposed to be? I mean, obviously a person can have a career and work, but that may not be the reason why they came into this world. And I think the journey that all of us should be on is that spiritual journey of asking the questions. No matter how old you are, the Torah starts with Abraham and Sarah, people who in our society would be considered senior citizens. And that process of discovery started with them. So the Torah starts with them, but it's really a statement for all of humanity to say, like, hey, if the people who are later in age can start to spiritual experience, so can you who are much younger. And I think that's the question. And I think the more we ask that question and the more that we seek information that supports that process of self-discovery, of self-realization, the greater of a society that we're going to have, and a more purposeful society, and a less hateful society, and a less judgmental society, and a less violent society that we're going to have, because everything that we do in our lifestyle to reflect this desire of truth and unraveling and discovery and realization, and those, in my opinion, there's no better structure in the world than the Torah and the sages that emanate and the prophets that emanate from the wisdom of the Torah. And that wisdom and those insights have tremendous focus and clarity on exactly what I just stated in terms of, you know, human discovery and purpose and meaning.
Yeah. Okay. That's a nice show. Thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate you. This is Rabbi Mordechai Yosef Ben, and we'll see you next week, same time. And we got a great guest coming on. So, Denise, go ahead and take over, and we'll work it out that way. But we'll be posting up who we're having next.
All right. Thank you.
You were listening to the Caribbean Radio Show, The Chat Reel with Billy and Friends.